that better?
That's better.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
What's your time there?
This is a 2004 tax year appeal from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals, and at issue are really two final determinations of the tax commissioner, the 2003 determination where the dark fiber at issue in this appeal was held not to be used in business, and the 2004 final determination of the tax commissioner where they changed their view of the dark fiber in this case and assessed it as inventory. The asset that's at issue is a 41.26-mile fiber optic loop in Cuyahoga County, and only 36 strands of the 288 strands that comprise the fiber optic cable were lit or being used or leased to others as of December 31st of 2002 and December 31st of 2003. And the tax commissioner in the 2004 determination explicitly found that there was no material change in the facts or the nature of the appellant's business. And so we've raised the issue of collateral estoppel with respect to the tax commissioner's final determination in the 2004 case. Now, I think it's important that the court recognize some very important facts in this case. First of all, the fiber optic loop and the individual strands of fiber are not connected to anything until a user either leases them or American Fiber provisions a customer to access the fiber.
Counsel, so, is the status of the case as we get it? Does it still turn on whether or not the unlit fiber is inventory, or is it a different treatment than that by the BTA?
Well, Your Honor, I think if the collateral estoppel issue, if we prevail on that, would really preclude the tax commissioner from going into this inventory issue.
Okay, but
assessment.
Let's assume for a moment. I mean, that's an up or down. If you win on that, it's all over.
Right.
If you don't, and this is a different tax year, and I assume, without getting into a debate on that issue with you, tax commissioner could look at the same facts and decide, gee, I was wrong the way I treated it the first year. It's a break for your company. This year I'm going to treat it differently on that issue. But my question is, if we're past the collateral estoppel issue, is the treatment of the unlit fiber that it is inventory? Is that the tax treatment that's being applied all the way to us, or did the BTA treat it somewhat differently?
No, the Board of Tax Appeals affirmed the tax commissioner's determination that it was inventory, and we disagree. As noted in our brief, we really don't feel that this fiber is inventory under 5701.08, and specifically, we feel that we fall within that second section of that A paragraph, which is it really isn't used in business. It really takes you, the inventory argument really takes you back into is it used in business, because the code in that section really talks about things being stored, kept on hand as material, parts, products, or merchandise. Well, this fiber really isn't for sale.
What is the business of your client, though?
Our business is to provide fiber optic cable capacity to either other carriers. Mr. Azzalina testified some of our customers are banks, and he also said that if a retail, what I would just for sake of argument, a retail customer that needed us to extend a lateral to their house, put in the switches and the optronics so that they could use their home computer to access the system, we would do that. So there's three categories of customers.
Are any of the unlit fiber available for sale, or is it all for lease?
For lease, that's correct.
Would you agree that those would be taxable if you lit them?
Yes.
Why is it that the stored capacity of potential lease availability isn't inventory?
Well, in this particular case, this fiber optic loop was built for a particular customer, and then we built some excess capacity, but cable and wireless was going to lease it.
When you say the fiber optic loop, doesn't this run throughout Shaker Heights?
It runs through 4.06 miles of Shaker Heights.
Okay. And when you say built for a customer, that's what I don't understand.
If you look at Mr. Azzalina's testimony, they would not have invested the $5.2 million to build the loop if they didn't have some customers that would use some of the capacity that they were creating. And in this particular case,
they created more capacity than they needed.
Not a whole lot. I mean, he said they built some excess capacity in, but they were really counting on cable and wireless that went into bankruptcy to take up most of the capacity. And at the end of the day, they only ended up leasing 24 out of the 288 strands.
And is there potential to lease the balance at some future point to a different customer?
That's what we've been trying to do. But as of the lien date in this particular case in 03, we had not been able to lease any additional fiber beyond the initial 36 strands.
What is the statutory definition then of inventory of what's being held? Wouldn't that be an item that would be used in your business?
Well, this is an inventory in the sense of the statute. That's why I was directing the court to the specific language of 5701.08. It really talks about things, and we're not selling a thing. We're selling telecommunications capacity. If you need access to the Internet or other types of telecommunication capacity, you can lease some of our fiber, but we're not selling a product. And that's why we feel we fall into the bottom portion of that paragraph where it's not accessible as used in business unless it's capable of operation. And here again, Mr. Azzalina's testimony is very important. In order to access this fiber, you have to build a lateral from a building, and that could be 100 yards, a mile, 2 miles. In order to access the loop, and there's a map in the record that shows you where the loop is, and then you have to hook in, the optronics and the switching that allows you to use beams of light to transmit data. And as of the assessment date, only 36 of the fibers were being accessed through laterals by customers. The rest of the fibers were not hooked up to anything, not even the RU2 unit, which they used to monitor the sheep. I asked Mr. Azzalina if the fiber was continuously hooked up to that. He said, no, it's only periodically that they hook it up to that to just make sure that no squirrels have chewed through the sheep or anything.
You're referring to point. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Mr. Sleggs, are you saying that this unlit cable is machinery or equipment that's to become part of a plant or other facility? Because that's where that second part of the definition
right.
comes in. The first part of the definition appears very broad, which talks about anything that's being held as a means for carrying on your business. And if you
right.
look at the first part of that definition, the unlit cable appears to be there. But you're saying this is like machinery or equipment that belongs in another plant?
Well, we believe that a fiber optic loop is a facility. And if you look again at Mr. Azzalina's testimony, their business is to build these loops in particular areas of the country where there's a need for additional telecommunication capacity. And he built several around the country before this particular loop was built. And our position is that this is a facility that American Fiber built in Cuyahoga County to provide fiber optic capacity for a particular customer that ultimately went bankrupt. And so the vast majority of it has never been placed in service to be used in business for the reasons that I've been discussing with the court this morning.
I have one question on the valuation. If all of the 288 fibers were leased, would the assessment be more than the $4,925,514?
No.
Okay. So even if they were all leased, that would be the assessment by the commissioner, correct?
That's correct.
Help me understand a distinction. You have a tool rental company,
and they rent, they buy a fairly complex piece of machinery, and after they buy it, nobody leases it, and it sits there for a couple of years, and they have no one that they find that nobody, there's really no market for it. Is that inventory, or under your definition, is that not inventory?
No, if that particular piece of machinery was capable of operation, I think that would fall into the when stored or kept as part of material parts or products or merchandise. But we're not selling a product. We're just selling capacity not online.
So if a customer has to buy particular software to insert in the machine to make it useful, does that then make it not inventory? Because the customer has to do something to activate the machine, let's say it's something electronic.
Well, I think that would become a fact question of whether that software is so integral to making the machine operable that it would be considered something that is not capable of being used under the statute. But in this particular case, there are really two things that have to happen in order for the fiber to be used in business. We have to find a customer with need for that capacity, and then we have to provide them with access. Mr. Azzalina calls that provisioning.
What do you do to change an unlit cable or unlit fiber to lit? I mean, I know you say that that it's being used to provide the telecommunications, but is there something specific that needs to be done to provide that access?
Right. You have to actually tap into the conduit, and there are diagrams as to what the conduit looks like. So you extend a lateral from your building to our conduit, and then you go in and attach however many fibers you lease from us, and then you actually have to install equipment. We call it optronics and switching equipment, so it takes your data and squirts it through the fiber as light. That's how the data is transmitted.
But is all this additional equipment part that the customer provides? I'm just trying to find out what the distinction in your fiber between lit and unlit is.
Right. Mr. Azzalina testified there either the customer can do that themselves or American Fiber will do that. They will provide, he calls that provisioning. If they have a customer that just wants lit fiber provided to them, that they will extend the lateral, put in the optronics and the switching equipment. But whether it's American Fiber that does it, or you agree to do it yourself under your lease with American Fiber, that needs to be done in order for the fiber to become lit.
But there's nothing nothing that needs to be done to the fiber itself?
No, just routine maintenance of the fiber. Mr. Azzalina talks about the fact that they routinely will take a strand and hook it up to the RU2 unit just to make sure that the sheath is okay and it hasn't been damaged or violated for some reason, then that would affect not only, one fiber, but potentially the entire network.
Well, referring to the words in 108, is it your contention that the fiber is capable of operation or not capable of operation until someone plugs into it?
Right, that's correct.
Why not? It's capable of operation, is it not? Just needs someone to use it.
Well, it has to be accessed. You have to extend a lateral, which can be a not insignificant task, and then you've also got to actually, the fiber is not self-actuating. You need to hook it up to equipment that will shoot light through it and provide the appropriate switching capacity in order to send your data through it. So it's kind of like a garden hose without any water running through it. I mean, it really doesn't do anything until you start putting some water through it. And in order to do
a garden hose, let me take that analogy. A garden hose without water is not capable of operation.
Well, not until you hook it up to a source of water. And then you turn the faucet, which would be akin to a switch.
You think that's what the statute means?
I believe that based upon the facts of this particular case, that's an appropriate reading of the statute. And I think it's consistent with the United Telephone and Telegraph case, which dealt with the dead pairs. And I think the dead pairs are very analogous to the dark fiber here because those dead pairs were installed to provide capacity to future customers.
Isn't the difficulty you have here is that term, that phrase is used in context where a plant is not yet ready, it's in construction, and during that period of time, machinery or, as you say, or other facility is not considered to be used until the plant is ready, which makes perfect sense. But I'm having some trouble, as you can see, in making that bridge over to the fiber here not being capable when it's there ready to be used, like the garden hose.
Well, I think in the facts in this particular case were that we wouldn't have spent this money if we didn't think that Cable and Wireless was going to lease the fiber. They went bankrupt, and so we were never able to complete, really, the lighting of this particular loop. It's really been a very lightly used loop, and we feel that the assessment statutes and the case law that we cited in our brief supports the 2003 determination of the tax commissioner. I see I'm over my time. I'll just rest on my brief at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sleggs. Mr. Hubbard.
May it please the Court, I'd just like briefly to deal with the collateral estoppel issue. There's several reasons why that's not a problem here. First, as the Board of Tax Appeals held, the taxpayer didn't even confer jurisdiction upon the Board to consider that issue. It wasn't raised in the proceedings before the Commissioner in their petition for reassessment or in writing thereafter. And we may recall a case from the summer involving the jurisdictional requirements. And here they plainly weren't met with respect to that particular issue, as the Board of Tax Appeals held below. But even if the Board had jurisdiction to consider the collateral estoppel issue, and accordingly this Court would hear, on the merits, it plainly is wrong. The issue was not litigated at the Board of Tax Appeals. The issue we're talking about now, meaning being the whether the leased but unlit fiber optic cable pairs or strands constitute property used in business. That issue was not litigated for the 2003 tax year, and therefore it's not binding on anyone, on any party.
Well, counsel, let's jump up to the underlying merits.
May I have just one more point on that? Even if it had been litigated at the Board, and I think this is an important point, that wouldn't matter because issues litigated regarding tax liability or tax valuation, even by this Court, a determination for 1 year isn't binding on the next year. And there's a long line of cases that so hold, including the Hubbard Press case that I always like to remember.
Remember that case?
Let me take you to the facts here. And as Justice O'Connor drew out, I assume you agree, if they were all lit and lease revenue coming in from 100% of them, the tax commissioner's position on value would be the same as it is?
Or more, actually. I mean, if you think of it in the world where all of them are lit, all 288, well, there are probably going to be other costs associated that are capitalized. The commissioner's methodology is to capitalize the cost in the books, and then
so they would be paying no more tax if they were receiving revenue from the 100% of them than they're paying.
Well, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is there may be additional cost to support the full use if all of them are
so they would might be they might be paying less tax.
No, they'd be paying more, is what I'm saying. They, you know, in other words, to support that. The cable infrastructure, the loop, I mean, it could be that to support the full amount, if they're going gangbusters, then chances are there may be additional costs to support the infrastructure. They may need to expend more money to support.
You mean additional investment?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but that isn't.
That's not the case here, no.
Yeah, so, but, okay.
That's a point in terms
right.
of...
Right. Well, now let's back up to this loop was constructed somewhere. There's a map we haven't looked at, but
right.
it's in the
part
ground.
It isn't
in the ozone. It's in the ground.
Yes.
All right. And where it was placed in the ground, according to the taxpayer, was driven by who they thought was going to be their principal tenant.
Well, that's news to me. It's not on the record. Okay. What they're saying about cable and wireless and bankruptcy and all that. Nothing like that in the record. They waived a hearing on this. They didn't present any evidence, and they didn't put it in their brief. So, you know, that may or may not be true. I suppose that it's true, but
well,
certainly it's not in the record.
There's some compelling reason why, I mean, why most of this is not utilized.
Not necessarily. It was a new business. It was a startup business, and they built a lot of additional capacity in. And that's how businesses do things, particularly
okay, well,
when the installation costs are so they're basically fixed. So
what I'm getting at is that the loop could have Cuyahoga County is a big place. This loop, or it could have been just a pipeline from one end of the county to the other. Here it's a loop. It's presumably done because where it went in the ground is based on where they thought customers would be.
Absolutely.
Now, if it turns out the customers aren't where the loop is...
Well, I don't know if that's true.
You're in a world of hurt.
That's true, but I don't know if that's the facts of the case.
And somehow it doesn't seem right from a taxing standpoint whether it's because a company that they were counting on went bankrupt or... business changed.
Well, Your Honor, there is a remedy for that, but it isn't to exclude the property from taxation. It's to value it at whatever its true value is.
Yeah.
I mean, if, in fact, it's not producing the income that was anticipated, then the remedy they have is to say the depreciation rates and the obsolescence that the commissioner factors in are not sufficient. And we're certainly not precluding them from doing that. They didn't raise that. And I'll make that argument.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So your argument is if it's because we just put this in the wrong place,
mm-hmm.
and now it's pretty much might as well be a garden hose as fiber optics.
Exactly.
The remedy for that is a different approach to this case. And that is one evaluation.
And I would argue that part of our obsolescence and depreciation factors in that you're not using the full capacity at all times. You know, I mean, that's just a sensible thing to figure, and the commissioner does that.
But their argument is it's not used. The
unlit
aren't
their argument.
Used.
Absolutely, it's used.
How do you contend that the unlit fibers are used?
Because we look, like Mr. Slegg says, we look at the definition, and this court certainly has looked at the definition, and the definition of used in business, and it's a very broad one. It says
57108.
Yes, absolutely, and it's very clear from that it's all personal property that's held for sale or lease.
Okay, but counsel, we're applying the same statute, aren't we? That is designed for a merchant of T-shirts or orange juice.
That's right.
To fiber optic cable that is for which the utility is not complete, as he points out. To be complete, there has to be an extension of it beyond the loop.
No,
to
that's
the
not
customer.
True. No, that's a potential possibility, but they built the loop where it could be accessed in buildings, and a lot of people, there's no extension at all. There's a possibility that you'd have a lateral extension, but that's not a given. And also, the record clearly shows, Justice Lanziger asked the question about the activation equipment. The testimony wasn't that, sometimes they that AFS does the activation. No, the testimony was the customer does the activation. And that makes sense. You know, they have the activation equipment. That's expensive equipment. The whole point, this AFS is just in the business of leasing the cable. They're not providing the actual telecommunications services to anybody. And that's not their business model. Their business model isn't to buy activation equipment and then activate the unlit cable pair of strands. That's for their customers to do. And, you know, basically what they did is they built it in an area that has a lot of buildings, commercial buildings already. So there's not going to be laterals for those. Now, to be sure, like he said, if an individual wants to...
Well, when you say they're not going to be laterals, I assume the cable is out at the street. The fiber optic cable is out at the street, is it not?
Yeah, it's underground or it's in poles. They have conduit poles.
All right. But it's
conduit pipe and poles.
But it's at the street. And just because you have a building or an office in a building, there's still...
There's got to be splicing.
Most buildings weren't built with fiber optic cable in them.
So the cut for the lessee customer...
I think this building, when they rehabbed it, got fiber optic cable into it. That's
and,
one of the
and
things...
And that may or may not be done by the... by AFS, that part of it. A lot of times the customer will do it. That's purely at the option. It's kind of like when you sell a car. There's prep work that's done before the car is sold, but you're holding it for sale before then.
When I'm listening to your argument, the mechanics of this, you seem to make it simple, like you throw a – because the cable goes down the street, you just throw a switch and – you're on.
Well,
that wouldn't be true. There are still mechanical things to be done to see to it that someone sitting in an office suite that wants to, that's a stockbroker, for example, and wants to be on this high-speed, reliable means of communicating.
So the customer is going to take steps to activate its cable.
Yeah, but that means... somebody's got to build something to make that happen.
Council, what about on the other end, American Fiber's end? Do they have a switch there to switch it out to whoever is actually providing
Yes, they would take care of it. They have a network throughout the country.
You know, are all of these fibers connected to that switch? So on their end, everything is connected.
Yes.
It's just at the customer end, you need that final connection to a particular customer, and you're not going to know who that is until you get a customer.
Exactly.
Why did the commissioner in 2003 find this fiber to be dark and not taxable and then changed into...
Basically, Your Honor, we were a little behind the curve. You know, we weren't aware of what was going on. You know, we have seven people in the whole to take care of all the public utility taxes. We focus on valuation issues. And, you know, I mean, we're not perfect. So when we realized what the situation was, we developed a comprehensive approach to it, and we're treating everybody the same way. You know, so, I mean, I'd like to say otherwise. I like to say we're perfect all the time, but that's the way it goes.
You thought you were, Mr. Hubbard.
I am, but no, I'm just kidding. But that's what the... in terms of... this case, I think, if you have no further questions, I think it's...
Just one more.
Yes,
when
please.
You say that the 2003 tax issue is not litigated, why would there be litigation if your commission found there was no taxable value? What was there to be litigated?
But that's right. Absolutely. So
there was
put in controversy.
But there was an actual order issued that made that determination, was there not?
Well, no, the board actually didn't address that issue because it wasn't presented to them for consideration.
They didn't tax it.
Yes.
By not taxing it, there's nothing to litigate.
Well, that's true, Your Honor. Of any situation where the tax commissioner takes a position in favor of the taxpayer, you know, on appeal, the board's not going to address that. So it wasn't subject to the board's review. It wasn't part of an adversarial process. So, and as I was saying... even if it were presented to the board, and even if it were appealed to the court and the court made a determination, a long body of cases says that the determination of tax classifications and tax value, i.e. tax liability questions, is only binding for that year. It's not binding on either party for subsequent years. One of the classic cases on that is Standard Oil versus Zangerle in 1941, and it's a very, I would recommend looking at that. We cite it as additional authority. In that case, for the 1932 tax year, Zangerle, a very active county auditor, assessed various property, including Standard Oil's, as real property, and he won at the Court of Appeals. And then for the 1934 tax year, it got up to the court, and on the same issue, whether these big structures were real property or personal property, and this court addressed the issue of collateral estoppel and said, you know, every year is a different tax year. We know the Court of Appeals said it was real property. We're saying it's personal property, no collateral estoppel effect. And that case cited U.S. Supreme Court cases to a similar effect. when you have an administrative determination like class tax classification that applies generally to a lot of different taxpayers, you're going to have disparate treatment. If you allow an early determination of one taxpayer or one company competing against all these others, and then subsequently you apply a different standard to everybody else when you know what the facts and law are. And that's exactly what would happen here if we had a binding collateral estoppel effect, is that they would get the benefit of it, but none of their competitors would. So you have dynamic equal protection problems.
Does the analysis hinge on the fact that according to the statute, when there is installation, in order to be considered used for the purposes of the statute, it has to be the equipment is installed and in operation or capable of operation in the business for which it's acquired. I mean, that section of the statute seems to be the crux of the problem that we need to take a look at. What is your response to the line of questioning that Justice Lansinger initiated, that this is going to take additional equipment, technology, and expense in order to make some of those 288 fibers operational?
I guess it's like the water hose. I mean, you know, there's expense to turn on the water and everything else. I mean, basically what we have here, Your Honor, is the general rule that items held for sale or lease are subject to taxation. And then there's a narrow thing for machinery and equipment. That's items that are used by the company to effectuate its own services or make its own products. That's a completely different standard. If you're, let's say you're a lumber company and you're holding lumber out for sale, that lumber can be used for somebody, by a customer, to build a house. And when that house is being built, that lumber is not subject to personal property tax because it's under construction and used, just like the chief said. Another point, though, let's put aside this and say it's all not used in business. They didn't, the argument they're making is that there's a pro rata 87.5% reduction for that. And most of it's installation cost. And whether you put in a cable that has 20 or 36 strands, or whether you put one in that has 100 or 288 strands, the installation costs are going to be roughly the same. They're not going to go up direct proportion to the number of strands anyway. And their argument presumes that it does, but they didn't put any evidence on. So they would lose on that issue even if the property were considered not used in business. The Board of Tax Appeals expressly so found. I didn't hear Mr. Slegg say anything about that at all, but that would be another additional reason why the Board's right. And the Board expressly so held that way. And that would be totally consistent with this Court's decision in United Telephone 2. The first United Telephone case said that the unlit fiber, when it's used by the telecommunications company, are held for future use.
You've used your time, Mr. Hubbard.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Slegs, you've saved a minute of your time.
I just want to direct the Court to a couple items in the record. The map is on page 133 in the supplement. Mr. Constable, in two letters, talks about the loss of cable wire listed as a customer on pages 136 and 137 in the supplement. Provisioning is discussed by Mr. Azzalina at page 90 in the supplement. Extending laterals is addressed at page 96 in his testimony. We took the transcript of the Board of Tax Appeals hearing from the 2003 case and walked down to the 22nd floor and gave it to the tax commissioner in the 2004 case. The record is identical in the two appeals. I think it's also important to note, Justice Kupp asked about whether this loop is hooked into other loops. It's not. You have to really have access to another carrier. This is a closed loop as far as American Fiber is concerned, and Mr. Azzalina discussed that in his testimony.
My question was, at American Fiber's end, are their fibers hooked into American Fiber's switch?
No.
They're unconnected at either end?
All it is Mr. Azzalina, as he testifies in the transcript, is the fiber goes out of a panel that's not hooked into anything. It goes out of the panel in their point of presence, and then at the end of the loop, it comes in. Just like this, it's not hooked up to anything. The only thing that they do with the loop, separate and apart from leasing to a customer or provisioning a customer, is they'll occasionally take a strand and hook it into the RU2 unit. and they shoot a beam of light around to make sure that it comes back. And then they know the sheath
it takes
is okay,
a few minutes
and put
to,
it back.
It takes a few minutes to hook it into what is the switch?
That's correct. So but it's not really a switch, Your Honor. It's just a panel where the fiber comes in and goes out.
Well, then the fiber is operational, correct?
The fiber
if
is...
If you can test it and make sure that it works, then it's operational.
We test it periodically to make sure that the sheath is maintained. It could be
That's
that we lease
intended.
A fiber. Yeah, but you could pull a fiber and find out that it's no good. I mean, it's glass. You won't know it's good until you light it. Because he talks about that. The reason why the sheath is such a big deal is, and why it's so expensive to lay this thing, is you can only bend it so much. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that when they were building this thing that they bent a few strands and broke a few. You don't know they're all good until you light them.
What is your response to Mr. Hubbard's suggestion that this is really a valuation issue and not a question of whether the property is used in business?
Well, I think it's interesting because I think the tax commissioner has uniformly contested any attempt to move away from cost, and I think based upon the facts in this appeal, I mean, we just completed building the loop in 2002. Our costs were very fresh. You'll see some correspondence from Mr. Constable in the record that the cost of fiber did come down over time, but the assessment date is so close to our installation, I don't think there's really a cost issue here, Your Honor.
Well, I think he was taking up on your contention that the business, this was planned for business that wasn't there.
Right.
And isn't that's like a building that's constructed in a shopping mart that's constructed and then the business isn't there, so the valuation of that property is affected by the business. I think that was his point, that you argued so much of your argument was based upon the fact that there wasn't the anticipated demand for this service didn't materialize, and so that sounds more like valuation than whether the optics were ready for use, capable to be used.
Yeah, I think we've stood by our position in this case going back to the 2003 case that it's just not used in business. We never really felt that since our costs were so new that there was really a valuation issue here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sleggs. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.